And from the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. An atmospheric river will saturate the outer coast tomorrow, hitting the southern panhandle of Alaska with heavy rain. Nathan Compton is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Juneau.
It's going to be actually drifting right along the coast from north to south. So it's going to start over in Yakutat, it's going to drift down to Sitka, and just move right on down to Prince of Wales Island.
Compton says the heaviest wave of rainfall will hit Sitka on Thursday afternoon and into the evening. Forecasters expect the system to bring around an inch of rain to Sitka and 2 inches to Ketchikan. Nevertheless, Compton says it's unlikely the system will be strong enough to trigger landslide activity. He says while the National Weather Service doesn't forecast landslides, it works closely with the United States Geological Survey to determine whether atmospheric conditions are right historically for landslides to occur.
Typically, we would like to see heavy rainfall for extended periods of time and then strong winds on top of that. I'm talking greater than 40-mile-per-hour gusts, and it doesn't look like we're going to be seeing that anything like that for this upcoming system.
And while Southeast can expect a break from the rainy summer later this week, there may be a glimmer of sun this afternoon and tonight, but Compton says it'll be followed shortly by heavy winds.
And so I don't want people to get the wrong idea. It's like, oh, yeah, it's sunny, let's go out. No, it's going to be hitting directly after that.
He says the best place to stay informed as the atmospheric river develops is on the National Weather Service website or the regional office's Facebook page. A quick update, we're rescheduling our community barbecue and public safety conversation due to the forecasted atmospheric river and high winds that are scheduled to land tomorrow. Please join us next week instead on July 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Riverside Rotary Park. That's next Thursday for our community barbecue and public safety conversation. And as for the news, a windfall of state education money means the Juneau School District Board of Education can pay off debt and hire new positions. But looming funding uncertainties on a state and federal level could mean future cuts. KTOO's Jamie Deep reports.
The board had nearly $1 million extra to work with after legislators boosted state education funding. Members opted to put most of it toward the district's transportation and food service deficits, as well as a new school librarian and a registrar for the district's homeschool program. Board members made these decisions against a backdrop of state and federal funding uncertainties that could put millions at risk for the district. Board member Amber Fromhurst says they have to really consider what's necessary.
Everything right now is a moving target, and we are all trying to budget for a moving target with disappearing pots of money.
Last week, the Federal Department of Education blocked millions in grants for Alaska schools. The district is supposed to receive nearly $420,000 of funding for these programs. That money pays for a high school computer science class, as well as support for English language learners, professional development, and 4 staff members. District officials say they could reassign some staff members, but the board set aside $80,000 to keep the program's administrator if the blocked funding doesn't come through. Board member Emil Mackey says the district shouldn't count on the frozen federal dollars.
I regard them as gone until proven otherwise, because that is the stated intent of this administration, and it's the stated policy of the Supreme Court to allow that to happen.
There's state funding uncertainty, too. A proposed regulation change from the State Department of Education and Early Development could cost the district $8 million in funding, as well as services provided by the city and borough of Juneau. Several board members, like Mackey, were in favor of closing the deficit in transportation and food service.
This is an intergenerational deficit that, if we don't address each single year, we pass it on to the next group of students. It will compound, and eventually there will be a day where this becomes an oppressive amount.
Mackey said he would only approve the deficits, but later voted to approve the homeschool and federal grant administrators. The district also approved adding an administrator to act as a registrar for the growing number of homeschool students. Board member Steve Whitney supported the position because it would support students who he says really need it.
I just think it's worthy that for that number of students we have, it sounds to me like this is understaffed, and especially relative to other schools, especially if you compare the amount of services students are getting. So I think that is justified to add back in.
The Zantikahini campus, which houses 3 schools, will also be getting a librarian. Member Elizabeth Siddons says the students need it, even with funding uncertainties.
These are hard conversations and frustrating conversations, and there's a lot of, like, theoretical crises happening all around us. But when I think about those students at that Zantikahini campus, Walking to school August 15th, they deserve a library.
The board funded the positions, but the district still needs to recruit and hire staff to fill them. These additions took up most of the additional revenue the district received. The district chose not to continue its long-running universal free breakfast service and did not add staff to support teaching math and reading at elementary schools. The school year begins August 15th. In Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
And a note, Amber Fromhurst is a member of KTOO's board. And Sitka police spent Friday afternoon searching for a Soldotna man who's been missing in Sitka since December of 2023. Sitka Police Department spokesperson Serena Wild says they resumed the hunt for Jedediah Cauchy after his father came forward with new information.
He'd spoken to a lady who thought she'd seen Jedediah the night he went missing, maybe over behind Blatchley in an abandoned area or in an abandoned building over by UAS. And so getting that information from him, we have the resources to search those areas. So we did launch the search and rescue to go check them out, and they didn't find anything at either location.
Fire Chief Craig Warren says a couple of dog teams and about a dozen people searched the area around Blatchley Middle School and the local University of Southeast campus for about 4 hours, but found no signs of Cauchy. Police and search crews have turned up a few leads since Cauchy's disappearance over a year and a half ago. Security footage showed Cauchy leaving Orion Sporting Goods around 4 o'clock in the afternoon on December 13th, 2023, his last known whereabouts. Anyone with information is asked to contact the Sitka Police Department. And you're listening to Tongass Voices, perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. A new mobile crisis team has been operating in Juneau since November. Each team is comprised of a clinician from Bartlett Regional Hospital and an EMT from Capital City Fire Rescue. Megan DeSlover and Sarah Zagliffa reflect on their role in filling some of the gaps in behavioral health care in Juneau. The first responders broke down how their unit helps get patients care on their own terms.
So this is what goes in the crisis bag. We have a resource binder with everything you can imagine, treatment applications, resource lists, different assessment tools is in there. Clean socks for someone who's walking around in wet socks. That's never a healthy thing, so I always keep a stash.
I'm Sarah Zagliffa, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker on the mobile crisis team.
My name is Megan DeSlover, and I am a community health specialist with Capital City Fire and Rescue and an EMT, and I work on the mobile crisis team. I've been working with the fire department since 2018. Just naturally being a part of the mobile integrated health team, I have become a part of the mobile crisis team. We've done a number of trainings to prepare us for this, and so that's how I'm here.
So I got involved in mobile crisis way back in the 90s. Believe it or not, I got my master's degree way back then. I was living in San Francisco and part of the domestic violence task force there and really immersed into crisis work at that point and was married to the military. We relocated. We're stationed in Alaska, decided to settle here, and wanted to commit to the community. I was working at Bartlett in the emergency department for 4 years. Then I worked in behavioral health and a little bit in oncology. And then when this program started getting up and running, I really wanted to get back to my crisis roots because it's the best job. Love it.
I learned that we have a huge need in this community for assistance, and that there isn't always money and there aren't always avenues and there aren't always people to fill those roles. So I've been really thankful to be a part of this because I feel like our role has been very helpful.
I feel really inspired by Bartlett and other community partners like CCFR being very invested in the safety net of the community, and being part of the fiber of that safety net is really important. I think the best part about this position and where I've learned the most is how important it is to meet the patient literally and figuratively where they're at. Your assessment is so much more rich and respectful when you're on their turf and you are their guest versus the natural change in dynamics when you're in an emergency department or in a more clinical setting. I feel really proud of how our team as co-responders can just sit with someone and just be with them in whatever it is they're in, with no agenda, with no pressure.
We don't fix everything for everybody. Certainly that's not even the goal, because it would be impossible. But just people feeling like, oh, I have someone else to reach out to.
I feel like crisis is an invisible illness. Behavioral health is an invisible illness. It's not outward. So a lot of people, I think, can easily hide some of these things and not identify it as a crisis. And we come judgment-free to just see where we can go with what we have. There's plenty of times we go on a call thinking it's about one thing, finding out the root is actually something very different, and we can work on that root. Or maybe the person's not ready to open up to complete strangers, and so we can offer other types of support and then maybe follow up with them. Or now they know us, and when they call, we're not starting from square one.
That was Mobile Crisis Response Team Megan DeSlover and Sarah Zaglifa. You're listening to KTOO.